Alrighty, we're back up. Sorry about that. I didn't want to. Alright, so we're back up here. Thank you, everyone who's still here. I just didn't want to make sure we didn't get all the audio from the roommate entering the room. I don't know if he necessarily wants to be on camera or not, so I don't want to. Disrupt his privacy, or whatever the proper terminology for that is. But we'll continue on with this next article. And sorry for the podcast listeners, it may be a little rough edit here. I'll try to make it a little smooth for the audio listeners, or for those on YouTube when I combine the videos here in the future. But we'll continue on with what I was talking about with this next article. And this talks about my main topic and main idea of this whole fires, and that is essentially the mismanagement of California and what's going on with their forest management. As I was already kind of talking about in the past, forest management is something that is very, very much important to reducing fires and reducing potential harm for something to happen in the future, and something that is greatly needed and greatly important to control everything, to make sure nothing bad happens, well, in the future, as I've already kind of said. I don't want to keep repeating myself, so I'll just get into the article here and talk about what they had to say for the mismanagement of California. And this is by National Review. At some point in the next 30 years, global temperatures are expected to rise 1.5 Celsius above their pre-industrial levels, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. If we doubled the average fuel efficiency of all cars on the planet, decreased the amount of global automotive travel by one half, increased the solar energy usage 100-fold, and increased wind power capacity by 10 times, we would go over half of the way towards averting that temperature increase, assuming that all predictions are accurate and nothing else in the world changes in the interim. A tall task, but as California Governor Gavin Newsom plans to combat the wildfires consuming his state, this is a climate damn emergency. This is real and it's happening, said Newsom during a press conference. We wish the governor luck in reducing annual worldwide carbon emissions by 8 billion tons, necessary to stabilize temperatures while maintaining a vibrant economy in the meantime. How about a plan B? Fire plays a national role in regulating the life cycles of trees and vegetation in the pre-industrial air. More than 4 billion acres burned in California annually. Skies were largely smoky much of the summer and fall in California during a prehistoric period, according to an environmental scientist at the University of California, Berkeley. Fortunately, we have now knowledge that the technology to distinguish the frequent and extent of wildfires, prescribed burns, and proactive caring of dead vegetation are known to reduce the spread and intensity of fires by diminishing the stock of combustible material, but the federal and state agencies have put a non-mental emphasis on suppression rather than prevention of fires. After a series of devastating fires across the American West in 1911, Congress passed the Weeks Act, which has increased federal funding for firefighting efforts. The U.S. Forest Service substantially required that all fires be suppressed during reaching 10 acres and committed sufficient resources to point out any fire within the day. In California, the upshot was a reduction in annual burning by 95% and an amendment to increase the in-state vulnerability to fires. Dead trees and overcrowded forests became literal tinderboxes, and to decades of mismanagement, a recent spike in tree mortality due to primarily due to drought, and you get frequent desolating fires. Again, that's a big thing. It's something I didn't really think about too much when I thought of this whole fires. But if you think about eco-management or how nature is, again, if you ever gone on a hike on a trail that's not just like on your neighborhood or something, you would notice that these trees, especially here in Texas, we have a lot of pine trees. And I don't know if California necessarily has pine trees, but I'm sure they have something similar if they don't have pine trees. And that is these trees you have, and you have these long branches or pine needles or loose leaves or whatever, and they fall down onto the ground. And if you don't do controlled burns, or if you don't do any sort of major reduction management to the ground and the surface level, one, your trees are going to die because, again, you have this massive buildup. So it's like kind of drowning your plant with water or putting way too much soil to the point where the plant can't get any of the water because it all soaks before it reaches the roots. And that's kind of what's happening with the trees. It's something that I didn't really know much about till I started to look into why there were controlled fires. Because controlled fires kind of made sense to me in my head whenever I was like 14. But before I was 14, I'm like, why would you want to burn something? That doesn't make much sense. But anyway, it kind of made sense to me that you would want to control the forest to make sure of that. And really, the point what made sense was more this second point. Not the point of keeping necessarily trees alive because of buildup, but the point that you don't want this buildup to exist. Because what's happening in California, as this article kind of just talked about, are those that other articles have pointed out and other people have talked about, What's happening in California is that this buildup is happening around trees. And when fires happen, they become wildfires because the buildup of pine needles and loose leaves is so much that it catches it immediately. So those who have been in, you know, Boy Scouts or family camp out or a camp out in general know that when you start a fire, you tend to want to get your tinder, you want to get your kindling, you know, small sticks and loose leaves, and that's how you kind of start a fire. You don't start a fire with a huge log right away, unless if you're cheating and you bring charcoal and flaming oil or whatever you call it. Girl Scout water is what I call it, but you get the point. That's how you start a fire. So therefore, making this tinder and kindling build up and exist around these large trees, and then a match gets lit and everything is dry because of the temperature, either due to climate change or just because the temperature is high, regardless of what you believe, these fires then boom catch and now a wildfire exists. So the big point about California is simply that wildlife management, or more importantly, forest management, needs to be improved if they want to reduce these fires. And just because climate change, yes, it exists, yes, Gavin Newsom, yes, climate change, blah, 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 you need to make sure that you're actually protecting your civilians and you're actually taking care of the environment through controlled burns. Because I would argue with Gavin Newsom and anybody that is 100% for the way California has controlled their forest is that through simply not touching, because, you know, that's the way nature is supposed to be. You just step back and let nature do its thing. Yes, that's beautiful when it works, and yes, that's beautiful when these fires don't happen. Because what's happened, especially in California, is that in the past, the war had existed, and nature was able to do its thing through lightning strikes or whatever else, and fires would exist but eventually go out, and large parts of forest would be burned. But at the same time, there wasn't that many people on Earth for it to necessarily bother. But now that California and these other states, and really across the entire United States, is so heavily populated, that any time a wildfire exists, there's people at harm. And especially in a place like California, people are probably going to die if the wildfire gets big enough. So the fact that you're willing to not even touch it and just let nature do its thing, because of climate change, and then you end up killing people indirectly or directly, depending on how you want to take that approach. More indirectly than directly, of course. But it's just a wild idea to me, and it doesn't make much sense. And I'll read this last paragraph here, and you can read the rest again on your free time if you want. But I'll read this last one because it mentions kind of a solution to this. The solution is simple in principle, if not in practice, but a web of interest has held back progress in the Golden State. As a recent ProPublica investigation points out, burn bosses in California can more easily be held liable for their peers in some other states if wind comes up and their burn goes awry, but they face no consequences for allowing overgrowth. Federal legislation requiring environmental reviews for the simplest of forest management projects make it doubly difficult. Meanwhile, homeowners sustainably oppose the inconveniences that come with controlled burns in their neighborhoods. Better forest management would go a long way towards making California safer, but given Newsom's response, we won't hold our breath. Instead, we should make room for businesses and households to solve the problem on their own by incentivizing private burning and clearing. And then it has a whole bunch of pictures of the actual fires and these firefighters and houses and all this other crap related to this forest fire. So if you just want to see some actual pictures of firefighters and the wildfire prevention or really wildfire curing or whatever you want to call it now, it's a very good article just to simply, if you want to look at the pictures related to the firefighters trying to control it. And this is the last article on the wildfire and something that was rather interesting. And that I'll read the headline and then I'll talk about it a little bit. Smoke from the western wildfires has blown thousands of miles to New York. And this is by Scotty Andrew. And I'll play the video for those who are watching now, with no audio, just for those who are viewing it. But essentially, you see this gray, well, orange-gray sky that's covered across and is super thick to the point where you can't even really see tops of towers or, you know, the famous bridge when you think of New York. You can see it, but it's covered in, like, a thick fog, I guess is the best way to think about it. And this is all the way in New York, which is basically the exact opposite of California, for those who are viewing a map and maybe bad at geology. Is it geology? Or not geology, that's rocks. You get what I'm saying. But this one guy was mentioning that it looks like the apocalypse, because it kind of looks like a video game or like a really neat art painting of the orangey, kind of grayish, you know, fantasy type of sky that you would think of. And so that's something what's kind of funny. But real quick, a personal example was I was working in Colorado at a Boy Scout camp, San Isabel to be exact. This was, I think, a couple summers ago, anyway. And they had local wildfires in Colorado. And at one point, they were preparing an evacuation plan for the camp. Now, obviously, we didn't end up evacuating, but the fires were getting closer and closer to the point that a plan was starting to get made. Now, obviously, they already had an evacuation plan ready to go, because part of the camp and part of safety that you have to have for scouting to exist and for camps to exist, you already have the plan. That's part of the Boy Scout motto, is be prepared, you know, all that. But we were talking about that whole event, and we even had some staff members from another Boy Scout camp come to work at our camp that actually did have the fire run through the camp. So it actually destroyed a lot of their forest and buildings and such that camp had in Colorado. And we were high up in the mountains, but it's still possible for that fire to get to us potentially. But the big thing I remember about the whole thing was a sense of just a fog smoke in the air. You can more smell and kind of see the fire in the distance, not to the point where you would know exactly where it was, but you could tell, like, it's over that ridge, you know, back there. But at the same time, you could just kind of smell the smoke. So I bet that's similar to kind of what New York is going through here. But before we move in to the next topic, I'll check the comments and make sure we're still up on all those audio platforms due to that break in timing there. So we're looking good on all three platforms. Yes, we are. Sweet, sweet, sweet. Alrighty, we'll continue on here, man. This next thing is obviously something that a lot of people have talked about. If you've been on YouTube recently in any sort of time period or event, you would have seen this story pop up. Before I say off the topic, I'll take a little drink break and then we'll continue. Alrighty, so this topic. Again, as I was saying, if you follow any sort of YouTubers or political commentary, Ben Shapiro, Steven Crowder, Gavin Newsom, Gavin Newsom's the mayor, oops. Who was I think? Gavin McGinnis, or anyone else like that, you would have heard about The Cuties, this documentary that Netflix picked up. And this is by Variety, and the article reads, Cuties backlash led Netflix U.S. cancellations to spike nearly eightfold, analytics firm says. So before we dive deep into the article, I'll give a very brief recap of this whole Cuties event or Cuties story. Excuse me. So Cuties is a French documentary about a young dance team. And when I say young, I think they were like 9 or 8, I believe. But really young girls in a dance team. And it was kind of the whole... Okay. The purpose of the documentary... It was to show how the sexualization of younger kids was happening at such a young age through dance teams or cheer teams. But real quick, before I dive deep into the topic, if you're interested in hearing more about Cuties, you can listen to The Generational Gap, because they had a whole about like 30-minute, 25-minute, you know, a whole long segment on Cuties and with Robert and Ed on The Generational Gap show. And they really brought up some points that, one, I didn't really think about, and other points that I was thinking about, but they also reinforced that, you know, what I kind of already was thinking about the whole event. But I'm approaching it from a slightly different perspective. When you heard Cuties, you're probably going to think I'm going to want to go 100% against it right away. And I am very much against the way it was presented by Netflix. But the big importance is to understand why the whole film was made. Now, this was a French film, and the French documentary maker, and I'm not even going to try to say his name, sorry, Miss Rosemarie, but I'm not going to try saying his name because I don't want to butcher myself on this live stream here or in this podcast. But his whole purpose was trying to show how the sexualization of young children happens at already such a young age. And this was a point I didn't think about, and this is why I mentioned The Generational Gap show. Robert brought up a very, very good point about the age consent with certain things. So a lot of times in movies, and he brought up actresses' names and show examples that I don't remember, but essentially you could have an actress who is 21 or 22, 23, 19, whatever, who's playing a teenager, 13, 12, 14 maybe, you know, a teenager, and they have a consensual scene of sex or a consensual scene of an orgy or a consensual scene of something very provocative, but they're playing a character that's young. So essentially, a lot of people don't like seeing, you know, sex or anything that provocative in television shows with young children being the target or younger people being the target, teenager even. A lot of people are uncomfortable with teenagers engaging in sex on movies or whatever else, even though now it's gotten less and less and more people are accepting of that concept. But a lot of times when you show somebody of that young age do it, It's a lot of people get aggravated and don't like it. You know, it's something that's rather interesting. But that person, that actress, is herself of age. So Robert was, and I don't want to put words in his mouth or put words in Ed's mouth, but essentially he was arguing that since the actress was of age, she was able to make that decision of playing that role herself. So he didn't necessarily see the portrayal of it necessarily being a 100% bad thing from that perspective, but maybe from a moral perspective, he didn't like it as much. But when you have the documentary maker actually use young kids who aren't of consent and aren't adults by European standards or by American standards, by that matter, It's something that crosses that ground a little bit more. So by actually having 9-year-old, 12-year-olds play these characters as themselves, because again, it's a documentary, and show these provocative acts is something that is very, very different compared to an actress of age playing those parts. So Robert was kind of okay, and again, I don't want to necessarily put words, so if Robert's watching this now or anything, I don't want to put words in his own mouth, but essentially what I got from it was he was saying that he was okay necessarily with it if the person was of consent or of age to play the role, because he does think it's an important topic to show, because anybody who's gone to a dance practice, even at the age of young kids like 8 or 9, have seen maybe some of these dances or routines, even in a typical cheer school with middle school or junior high and especially high school. A lot of the cheer positions with pom-poms and such are sexualized, or at least people view it as being kind of a sexual type of thing. So the whole concept, what he was uncomfortable with, was the people actually being that age and showing it. But he also brought up the point that it was a French documentary, and he didn't really know much about the French culture, but he knows that it's definitely different than the United States culture. And it's important to also realize that this film went through Sundance first before it got brought onto by Netflix. And Netflix picked it up as a stream. And those who don't know what Sundance is essentially a very, very massive movie platform. I don't know if platform's the right word, but festival. Festival is probably the right word. A movie festival to where people get their own movie picked up. So essentially, if you have a Sundance movie, you're a private director that has to make all his money, maybe through investors or banks or something through loans potentially, but essentially you've had to do it all yourself. It's not through a studio. It's all kind of self-run, and it's independent films. And to get your person in Sundance, to get your movie passed by Sundance, or to get played at the festival Sundance and other festivals like it, is a huge deal. But Sundance is top tier for trying to get your independent movie. If you get your movie picked up by Sundance, you know you've done good, and you know that you've hit the jackpot for independent movie making. So the fact that it got through Sundance as a documentary, and Sundance attracts a different type of crowd than typical. A lot of people would be like, well, why were they watching this movie about the over-sexualization of children? Well, it was placed as a documentary and not necessarily as an outright piece for how Netflix displayed it. So I guess in summary, even though this wasn't really much of a summary, I don't like how Netflix decided to show cuties and how they kind of brought it up. Those who have followed any sort of news with cuties know the picture or the poster that Netflix tried to show about the whole news relating to cuties. And it was basically, if you don't know or if you want a reminder or whatever, it was basically these young children dressed in dance clothes, now provocative dance clothes, and they were kind of halfway in their dance routine. And the poster just had all of them around there. But you could obviously tell that they were being sexualized through that poster, and they were very young kids, and a lot of people were not happy with it. And that's where Netflix got a lot of heat, because the documentary maker himself said that that is not what Cuties was about. Cuties was about the over-sexualization of young children and trying to show it. And the director was like, look, people know about it, people have heard about it, people have seen it, or maybe not seen it, but people are aware of it, and now they need to see it. Now they need to actually see it to make action. Yes, there are moms that are aware, yes, there are dads that are aware, but people in general are just become sheeple. People in general just kind of go about their daily routine and don't really care about the issue. And he says that he actually needed to show it to open people's eyes so where that action could be taken within Cuties and how it was viewed. But I'm going to get into these articles, and we'll get into the complete opposite side, because that was just my main summary, my main perspective of the whole idea. But where I really have issues with is with Netflix, not with the documentary maker himself. And I haven't watched the movie. That's something that is very clear. I have not watched Cuties on Netflix or wherever else it might potentially be. I think it's just Netflix, but that's besides the point. I haven't watched the movie, so I don't know from a first hand about what's all in the movie. It's all just articles and people I've listened to talk about the movie. But my main issue is with Netflix and not necessarily with the documentary maker himself. But we'll get into the articles and we'll continue on. A campaign waged against Netflix over Cuties and a film's sexualized portrayal of children produced a surge in the U.S. subscription cancellations over the weekend. According to a research company, Yipita Data, Netflix subscriber churn rates began to rise September 10th, the day after the release of Cuties, when the hashtag #CancelNetflix was in the top trending spot on Twitter, according to the data company. On Saturday 12th, Netflix cancellation rate in the U.S. jumped to nearly 8 times higher than the average daily news recorded in August 2020, reaching a multi-year high, and the data analytics provider told Variety, with the #CancelNetflix hashtag continuing the trend on social media, it is possible evacuated churn could continue in the upcoming days, according to the firm. It's unclear over how big the impact it will have on Netflix's overall subscriber base, provided estimates on the number of subscribers who canceled. Customers regularly drop Netflix and other subscription services, and the Yipita members may unanimously reflect a short-term blip in U.S. cancellations that are relatively minor in the grand scheme of things. At the end of June, the company trailed 193 million paid streaming customers worldwide. That's after the Netflix noted about 25.9 million new subscribers worldwide in the first 6 months of 2020. New York Yipita, which sells information to industry investors, aggregates and analyzes data and sets the track and behavior of millions of U.S. customers, including from panels for email recipients, online transactions, app data, and web traffic. Netflix has defended Cuties, written and directed by award-winning French filmmaker Manuel Mimieux, arguing that a social commentator that makes the case about the dangers of sexualized imagery of young girls, and the streamer has urged those who have denounced the film to watch it. So that talked a little bit about Netflix cancellation rates with the Cuties controversy. And a lot of people, especially like Steven Crowder types, and I have my somewhat of an issue with Steven Crowder. I like most of his content. At one point, I was a Mug Club member because he was somebody, especially in his early days, like when he just made the Change My Mind series, I really enjoyed. But I do think he's gotten to be a little cliche. And what I mean by that is he picks topics that he knows his fans like. He's gotten big enough to where I think he's bending content to fit with what people want to hear, not necessarily being his true self all the time. And obviously when you get big enough, you are going to do that because he's running a business and he's very successful at it so far. So you don't necessarily want to change the people who are supporting you all the way. And by keeping consistent and keeping the same, it keeps people coming back. And if you kept changing, you would aggravate people when people would start canceling. So that's kind of the whole stick whenever you get to a certain size that Steven Crowder is at. But his whole thing with Cuties is a interesting idea and perspective to have as well. And that's what I originally took from Cuties. And again, I haven't seen the movie, and I don't think I'm ever going to see the movie because I don't really want to see how the director was trying to show the over-sexualization of young children, because it's very obvious and very poignant to point out that the type of people that Netflix was trying to attract through their poster or through the coverage of how they worded the series on their Netflix website or channel, whatever you want to call it, their service, was something that wasn't going to attract the type of people that are generally interested in documentaries like the filmmaker, I think, was attempting to do, but rather the type of people that want to watch young children torque And that's something I am not a fan of, and something I don't even want to see myself. That's just odd, that's just strange, that's just concerning. I don't want to do that. And that's something that is very obviously should be stated, and I don't necessarily think needs to be stated. I do want to make sure I'm clear in the fact that I don't support cuties, although I understand the perspective of the filmmaker making the movie, and I do think that it got taken out of context thanks to Netflix and their stupidity, but at the same time, I don't necessarily support the concept, like Robert was saying, in showing the young children and being over-sexualized in that way. But I'll read this next article by Fox News and Brian Flood, and it states, Axis walks back report tying conservative cuties outrage to the QAnon movement. Axis walked back a report that tied outrage to the controversial Netflix film Cuties to the QAnon movement on Monday. GOP politicians are jump-starting a Netflix boycott in response to film Cuties, which denounces the hypersexualization of young girls on social media. Their stance is linked to a child sex trafficking conspiracy theory controlled to the QAnon movement, Axis wrote in a now-deleted tweet to the company. The report was originally handled, Netflix faces its QAnon movement as lawmakers push to investigate Cuties, according to Media Research Center. After a significant backlash on social media, Axis updated the story to remove references to the QAnon conspiracy theory. The QAnon conspiracy theory is centered on the basis belief that President Trump is trying to save the world by waging a secret campaign against the enemies in a deep state and a child sex trafficking ring run by global elites who are satanic pedophiles and cannibals. The conspiracy theory emerged on a notoriously racist and sexist 4chan message board in late 2017, but has crept into mainstream politics. Their story was updated after publishing to remove references to linkage between the conservative criticism of cuties and the QAnon conspiracy theory, and the editor's note on the Axis story now says. And then it goes on to talk a little bit about more about people's thoughts on that whole. But I thought I would kind of include that just to say that there's a lot of different perspectives for cuties and what's all happened, from the outrage to people to whatever else. And this was the main article that kind of got me thinking, especially after listening to Robert about the whole perspective. And this is by People Magazine. Cuties director defends film, saying his hypersexualization young girls is a real issue. Director of the controversial film, new Netflix movie, Cuties, is defending her film after it was slammed by critics who believed it was hypersexualizing children. During Toronto Film Fest panel on the French filmmakers Monday, the director argued that her indie film was instead trying to raise awareness about how young girls are treated, calling it a real issue, according to The Hollywood Reporter. It's because I saw so many things and so many issues me lived by young girls, then they decided to make this film and sound an alarm and say we need to protect our children. It's bold, it's feminist, but it's so important and necessary to create debate and try to find solutions for me as an artist, for politicians, and parents. Cuties follows Amy, an 11-year-old girl from Singal who joins a dance team dubbed the Cuties. At her school, he slowly becomes more aware of her blossoming femininity, which causes tension in her traditional family. Earlier this week, Netflix stood by the movie in a statement to the calling the film a social commentary against the sexualization of young children. It's an award-winning film and a powerful story about the pressures of a young girl's face on social media and from society, more generally growing up, and we would encourage anyone who cares about these important issues to watch the movie, the streaming service said. Netflix began advertising the movie ahead of its release on September 9th and received backlash over its marketing poster for the film, which critics claiming that it sexualized children. And here you can see the poster, and obviously there's nothing about this poster that doesn't sexualize the children, because you have kind of the main chick in a squat-like stance. Then you have a chick behind her in a upper squat stance, and then you have one that's basically twerking beside her. So everything about this poster is showing a sexualization of this young children, even with what they're wearing, with basically a sports bra type of top and booty shorts or whatever on the bottom. So the whole poster, everything about it is sexualizing young children. And again, I go back to saying that I'm not necessarily a fan of cuties and how especially Netflix decided to show, because everything that Netflix has done has completely showed how cuties is wrongful and cuties is bad and is attracting the wrong type of audience because of Netflix and not necessarily because of the original intent of cuties. But at the same time, I'm not necessarily a full fan, and again, I'm repeating myself, but I want to make sure I'm very clear on this. And the fact that I don't necessarily agree on the fact of having young children necessarily play these roles, because I would argue having actresses of age, over 18, adults over 20 or whatever, and play these young girls and still show the act would be impactful. But at the same time, to argue from the other perspective, to play devil's advocate, to argue from the director's perspective, anything that change has to start with a conversation. And by the fact of him making this movie, making this, or really this documentary, and having Netflix pick it up, a lot of people are seeing this actual issue that exists and are becoming aware of the actual event. And it's because of Netflix that they got wrongful commentary. But at the same time, again, I just keep going back to saying, do you really have to use 9, 10, 11 year olds to make this film and show the same sort of concepts? This is the last article about cuties, and this is by the Rolling Stone. How cuties is fueling the far right's obsession with pedophile. And I thought I would end with this because it's just crazy. No foreign film in recent memory has attracted quite as much scrutiny as Netflix's Cuties, directed by French filmmaker, and again, I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to butcher it, which was hit when it premiered at Sundance last year. It tells the story of an 11-year-old girl, Amy, who strays from a strict conservative and religious Muslim upbringing to join a hip-hop dance troupe. And in essence, Cuties is a coming-of-age narrative and a commentary on social media's role in sexualizing children, but that was what the film's poster, a largely huled image made up of prepubescent girls pouting at the camera and crouching in various suggestive poses. Many correctly pointed out that the poster was inappropriate for those who have seen the film, also correctly pointed out that it was misleading and an offensive image to marketing that was a sensitive portrayal of female adolescence by a gifted woman of color. I don't know why the gifted woman of color is in there, but we'll continue. Many more people still incorrectly suggested that Cuties and his accompanying marketing materials were evidence of an underground child sex trafficking cabal in Hollywood. It was kind of wild-eyed, heretical, or allegation that in previous years would have primarily been promoted on fringe message boards and in Facebook posts authorized by crockpot ants only to quietly wither on the vine. Yet this was not the Cuties debacle. In September, the film finally premiered on Netflix. And then we have critics such as Tulsi Gabbard, and this is from her Twitter account, at Netflix. Child porn Cuties will certainly whet the appetite of pedophiles and help fuel the child sex trafficking trade. 1 in 4 victims of self-trafficking are children. It happened to my friend's 13-year-old daughter. Netflix, you are now complacent. An accusing leftist of pedophile has become the latest ridicule kudal among those on the far right. The tactic has roots in conspiracy theorist circles such as QAnon community, which is centered on the belief that a shadowy cabal of prominent left-leaning celebrities such as Tom Hanks and Chrissy Teigen are involved in a child sex trafficking and baby-eating ring. As Rolling Stone has previously reported, QAnon has become increasingly mainstream in recent months, thanks to an explosive popularity of the Save the Children movement on Facebook and Instagram, as well as the success of child trafficking conspiracy theories centered on the furniture brand Wayfair a few months prior. The claim that Joe Biden has been accused of child molestation has blossomed over the summer. And then it has this tweet, those who are viewing live, of when he sniffed men and chick and young girls' hair, as well as simply just kind of touch over them in uncomfortable faces with Joe Biden. And this article is a very long one, but you kind of get the whole gist of what Rolling Stone is talking about within this Cuties movie. And again, it's kind of talking about points I've already said. So that kind of brings me to the end of this topic. And I would love to hear your thoughts about what you think of Cuties, because Cuties is something that has been rampant in discussion, and it's really been probably at least a week that I've heard news about Cuties and kind of formed my own opinion after reading. And I haven't watched the movie, but I do plan maybe to watch. I don't really want to watch the movie, but I might actually watch the movie to see if the opinion I'm sharing now in this on the podcast and on this video is the same feeling that I necessarily have after watching a movie, because I think it'll be interesting to look back on and see if I do have the same opinion. But I don't necessarily know if I want to watch it yet. But again, those who are watching the video now, I would love to kind of hear your comments about your whole thoughts on Cuties, because I do know that pretty much everybody at least has some sort of opinion when it relates to Cuties. Now I will check on the comment section real quick, and then we'll dive into the next batch of, or my next topic, and go on from there. Jimmy says on YouTube, Netflix offers a lot of weird videos. Yeah, Netflix has a lot of interesting proponents. Has a lot of interesting proponents on it as well. The whole thing about Netflix is the fact that they have a lot of movies. I'm a movie fan myself, and this doesn't necessarily relate to Cuties necessarily itself. But at the same time, Netflix is a constant barrage of movies. If you're a movie buff, if you're a movie fan, Netflix has a huge catalog of movies. You can essentially spend your entire life and probably be watching a Netflix movie all the time. Anyway, so the whole thing, I'm a big movie fan. I've listened to a lot of people that talk about it, but I've also noticed through being a Netflix, through my family's account or whatever else, that there's a lot of just weird type of movies that Netflix does have. And thank you, Edgar, for the donated diamond. I highly appreciate that. And on D-Life, he states, you are getting a lot more comfortable with talking on live stream. I can tell. And yeah, this is a lot better. Last week was a little different because I switched venues and I was doing it in my dorm. But I was doing it in my dorm, so I felt a little bit uncomfortable with that. But I did think it went smoother than I thought. But I am getting a whole lot more comfortable with talking on a live stream for sure. Thank you for that comment. And then he also states, when's the last time you saw a coming of age film that was rated MA? And yeah, that's the biggest thing with the whole Cuties thing was the fact that that's a good point, because the whole thing, and this is where I keep kind of saying the same thing throughout this video, was that in really when I watched you guys Ed and Robert on the generational gap, it kind of made the point fully stick into my head. And I think Robert said, but it could have been you, and I was I think it might have been you, actually, but it was the fact that you don't really have to use young children who are underage to show this video, or to show this whole concept of the over-sexualization, and the fact that it is rated MA kind of shows the lack of awareness to the whole issue. The whole thing about Cuties is I don't know if it's necessarily 100% a valid movie or a valid concept, a valid idea to be made in the way it was made. And it is a foreign film, so you do have to take that into account a little bit. But at the same time, you have to take your general morals, your general motivations, your general ideas in human nature into account. And Edgar also says on YouTube now, fuck D-Live, they keep buffering. And yeah, D-Live has had some issues, really. I tried watching your show on D-Live before in the morning as I'm kind of getting ready. And I ended up just going to YouTube because it has some problems lately. I don't know if they're doing some updates or software or something, but anyway. Now my next batch, and usually I cover this batch of topics last, but I wanted to cover this topic second to last because really the last sort of topic I'm covering is of Kamala Harris and a little bit about Joe Biden just by himself. But like I was saying before, really till November, which is actually not that long from now, I'm going to be covering the election and every week and kind of looking at polls. And again, as I say, every single podcast, and those who might have listened to every single one are probably tired of it by now, but I don't necessarily believe 100% in polls, and I don't necessarily think that they're always that useful. But at the same time, it is generally a good way to kind of show like what type of voters the candidate is attracting, and is a good way to kind of get a general idea about what's happening. And this is by Politico, and it states, polls, Biden leading Trump in Wisconsin, running neck and neck in North Carolina. Joe Biden is leading President Donald Trump by double digits in Wisconsin, and the candidates are virtually tied in North Carolina, according to CNN and SRSS polls released on Tuesday. The polls, which counted likely registered voters in both states as separate polls, echo a number of recent polls that have shown Biden leading or too close to call in a number of critical states. Wisconsin played a vital role in Trump's 2016 electoral victory, and North Carolina is likely to be a key state in Democrats' efforts to take back the Senate. Among likely voters in North Carolina, 49% surveyed said that they preferred Biden's ticket, while 46% opted for Trump's. That gap increased with registered voters in the state, with 44% supporting Trump's ticket and 49% for Biden's, barely outside of the margin of sampling error of plus or minus 4.1 percentage points. Among likely voters, the gap was within a 4.4 point margin. Again, that's within the range that it could go either way. And then I'll continue. In Wisconsin, however, Biden's lead was clear among both registered and likely voters in the state. 52% of the respondents said that they supported Biden's ticket. Meanwhile, 41% of registered voters and 42% of likely voters supported Trump's. Both gaps are comfortably outside the 4-point margin of sampling error for registered voters and a 4.2-point margin for likely voters. So again, you can take what you want out of polls. Again, they're not necessarily 100% truthful or a good idea, but North Carolina and Wisconsin are both kind of swing states a little bit within that election, so it is an important state to win. And I'll continue on to this next article that also talks about North Carolina, but Biden still winning in Wisconsin, and this is from CNN and Jennifer Augusta. We're going to read similar sort of numbers, but I thought it's interesting to at least get two perspective of what's going on. The results suggest North Carolina voters see some strengthening in each candidate. Likely voters through their divide over which candidate would likely handle the top issues on the campaign, with Trump holding on an advantage on handling the economy, 52% to 45% among likely voters. And Biden ahead on handling the coronavirus pandemic, 52% to 46%. By the way, that just makes no sense to me. I don't know how Biden's pandemic response has been anything. All he's really said is, you have to wear a mask. You have to wear a mask, guys. You have to wear a mask. And then next thing you know, he has his mask down on his chin and he's talking on the mic. I remember, I think it was the last town hall in Kenosha, I believe, actually, where he was saying, oh, you know, we have to follow social distancing guidelines. And then next thing you know, he's walking next to people and, like, pointing at people and talking to people, clearly not 6 feet apart or wearing a mask at this town hall. So he's clearly not following CDC guidelines that he's talked about against Trump. So that just makes absolutely no sense how people could say that he's better with the coronavirus pandemic when he's done absolutely nothing about it. But at the same time, I guess it's just generally people not agreeing with what Trump has been doing, which you could argue is a little bit different. Anyway, I won't get bogged down on that, but I just thought that was rather funny when I read it the first time and read it now. Anyway, and racial inequality in the U.S., 53% to 41%. They see Biden as more of an apt to unite the country, 54% to 40%, and are more likely to say Trump has the stamina and sharpness to be president, 50 to 44%. And we're going to get into this stamina and sharpness here in a little bit, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that because it's upcoming here in a little bit. So I'll just continue on. They split evenly, 47 to 47%. Over who has a clear plan to solve the country problems and who would keep Americans safe from harm, 49% Trump to 48% Biden. And now we're moving to Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, on the other hand, Biden has the edge over Trump on all but two of those tested matchups. And on those where Biden does not have an edge, neither does Trump. Biden is widely viewed as more apt to unite the country, 53% to 36%. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. To unite the country is something that's rather different, because I do think that the majority of Biden's voters are simply people that want to have a return on normalcy. Now, when I say are the most amount of voters, really it depends about how much of the orange man bad people there are. The people that are think that Trump is bad in every way are obviously going to vote for Biden just for the fact that they don't like Trump. Now, the only thing is how many of those people actually exist. We know the people who watch CNN daily, who are those type of crowds, are going to vote for Biden no matter what. And we could say the same for Trump. Those who are going to watch Fox News all the time are most likely are all going to vote for Donald Trump, because it's just the news they watch and they get brainwashed into just kind of believing those ideas. That's something that's very simple. But the whole concern is how much of people actually believe that everything Trump is doing is bad. Or you could even say a little bit less than that. They just think that Trump is bad and don't want to vote for him. I kind of take my mother as an example. Although I don't think she will vote for Biden, she doesn't like how Trump acts as a person or who Trump is as a person. And that really turns her off for trying to vote for Trump, and something that's very much a downside. But at the same time, she doesn't like Biden, so I don't necessarily think that her vote is towards Biden. But how many of those people don't like Trump as a person and rather see Biden as a return to normalcy? Because I do think that the return to normalcy is a bigger factor than just people that hate Trump in every way and are going to vote for Joe Biden just for the fact because they don't like Trump. But I do think that those two type of ideas, those two type of voters, are the biggest people that are going to be voting towards Joe Biden. And I think that that's maybe his biggest strong suit, because what mass media has done the most for Joe Biden is the fact that they have been his whistle. They've been his mic. They have completely gone against Trump in everything in every way. And that's made a echo chamber for people that view mass media, for people that listen to them, the people that respect the mass media or whatever else, to go against Trump because they believe everything he does, or at least most of the things he does, are bad. So I think that his strongest voter is in that number. So it is an interesting idea, and I just thought I would quickly kind of talk about that. And then it goes on to say, and handle racial inequality in the U.S. 55 to 38%. And that's obviously kind of just, the racial inequality thing is kind of interesting, because Trump takes the type of approach generally that he doesn't really care about racial inequality. Yes, he wants to pass laws that, for lack of the better words, help blacks or help with prison reform or whatever else. But at the same time, he's not someone that necessarily is going to pander towards that belief. He takes rather an opposite approach. He doesn't really see people's color as a policy or as a belief like a Joe Biden does, and saying that, look, I am your person because I know your struggles and I will make the black community rise up and be better. He talks to that community directly. Trump more talks to everybody, and his average voter is more the white person than the average voter of a Joe Biden, who may be Latino or black or whatever else. And obviously that's a little bit of a stereotype, but in general, that's kind of who the Democrats attract and who Joe Biden is really trying to target within his campaign and within his votes. And because Joe Biden has been mainly basement Joe Biden, we haven't heard that much of Joe, for the fact that his voice, what people think of Joe, is through the mass media. And that's kind of where he's getting all his numbers from. And I'm not going to read too much more in this article, because again, it kind of states what the last article talked about. But I thought it was an interesting idea to give a perspective on that. Now, I wanted to get this article by the New York Times. And as Ed said yesterday, and I think it's Andrew Klavan, who he stole the words by, the former newspaper New York Times. I just thought that was rather funny. And I think I'm going to steal that line from you, from him, from them. So anyway, whatever. You get what I'm saying. But anyway, so you see to the right here, all the states that Joe Biden is winning by is pretty much tied with from the point of margin where it could go either way. And for those who are listening on podcasts, you essentially have Minnesota with +8 towards Biden, Michigan with +8, Wisconsin with +6, Pennsylvania with 5. And Pennsylvania is a rather interesting one, because I remember hearing this from, wasn't Tim Pool, it was Ben Shapiro, and the fact that he thought that Pennsylvania was most definitely going to be a win for Donald Trump because of the fact that Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are anti-fracking, and that is where the majority of Pennsylvania gets its economy from, and the average folk that you may not necessarily see in the poll through calling or whatever else you get your polling information for is going to be against somebody that's going against their way of making money, obviously. And then it says Arizona with +5, Nebraska with +5, North Hampshire with +4, Nevada with +4, Florida with +2, North Carolina with +1, Ohio with -1, Maine with +1 of Trump, Georgia with +1 of Trump, Iowa with +1 of Trump, and Texas with +1 of Trump. And Texas is a rather interesting one because, one, I'm from Texas. So I kind of know, in general, the type of people that I'm aware of that live in Texas. But a lot of times, you've seen Texas turn more and more purple and not be necessarily the state that always votes red or always votes one direction like, let's say, California does. Because when I usually think of voting, you know, when I was like in middle school, I thought Texas was conservative, was Republican, and California was Democrat, and that was just the way it was, and there was no changing that. But a lot of people through articles and such have moved into Texas, so Texas is turning a little more purple, especially with the Beto versus Cruz election. At one point, a lot of people were thinking that Beto was going to win that race. But at the same time, it was rather interesting to see, well, Ted Cruz won. So is the state really as purple as a lot of people were thinking? But if you do believe those numbers with Texas, or with that polling numbers of Texas, Texas is a toss-up. So that is rather interesting. And that's kind of the end with the polling articles that I wanted to talk about. But the next topic is very much about Joe Biden himself. But before we get into that, I am going to look at the comment section here. And Layman Talks says, Joe Biden is a racist and has a racist history. And then under that he says, unless we do something about this, my children are going to grow up in a jungle. This jungle being a radical jungle, Joe Biden. And he has that in quotations. And thank you for your comment there, Layman Talks. I would highly appreciate it if you like what you hear, to hit that like button and subscribe. You know I had to do it. All YouTubers have to do it. So again, thank you for your comment. And it still seems so weird to say that. But anyway, and Joe Biden obviously is a rather interesting type of idea or type of candidate. Because for one, Joe Biden is very much a guy that says he's for the black community or for minorities, and basically is somebody that, in general, when you think of the Joe Biden type of person, is somebody that wants to support the candidate, that wants to support that community, and somebody that's for that community. But like as Ron Helton always said, or a Tim Pool, or anybody who's like that on YouTube, you can look at his past and especially his past relating to Black Lives, or not necessarily Black Lives, but his past with prison and drugs. That's it, the drugs. His drug rules or his drug laws greatly impacted the Black community to the point that it's put more Blacks in jail because of what he's done in his legislation back. I think this was even before Obama, but maybe even during the Obama presidency. I don't know my exact timeline there of when basically the drug wars have started from was because of Joe Biden. But that's something that is rather interesting because it goes directly against what a lot of people see Joe Biden as being. But we'll continue on to this next topic here. Whoops, wrong thing. Sorry about that. Continue on to this next topic. Alrighty, and this is a YouTube clip from the Donald Trump channel. Oh, I'm sorry about that. Oh, okay. Hang on. Oh my god. Alrighty, sorry about that. I didn't realize I had my other channel not muted. I thought I had everything muted there. So sorry about that. You were hearing my Google Chrome content where I'm listening to all your comments or reading your comments from. They were playing the video clips because obviously I have all three of them going there. So anyway, sorry about that, but we should be able to hear the video clip now. That was funny to me. All right, here we go.
Well, the media, in terms of what they're doing, is actually worse than what you're saying, because it looks to me like they're asking him a question and then he's reading an answer off the teleprompter. Now, that would mean that, like your friend over there, Donna Brazil, who Fox brilliantly hired.
It sounds like your favorite host. Time.
Donna Brazil, it's another real great one. But it would look to me like he's been given the questions and he's reading the answers, but that would mean that the media is giving him the questions. They never gave me the questions, I can tell you that. It's like we have some pretty wild times, but they hit me with the worst possible questions possible. And you have to learn to do it, and you have to be able to do it. And if you can't do it, you can't be a politician. You certainly can't represent our country, because when you deal with President Xi and Putin and Kim Jong-un and all of the people you have to deal with, in all due respect to the media, they're much tougher, they're much smarter than the people I have to deal with in the various rooms and outside by the helicopters and all the places I'm willing always to take questions. But I don't get any help in terms of here's the question and you can read an answer to it. I've never seen anything like it. And frankly, I think the media is disgracing themselves. But it's obvious that Joe is reading the answers off a teleprompter in many cases. That happened yesterday when he said, move it closer. A woman asked him a question, move it closer.
So obviously we can hear what what Trump was saying with his teleprompter thing. And they were in reference to Joe Biden when he said to move down the teleprompter, what he was reading from, because it was a little bit too far from his viewing. And obviously, Joe Biden's whole health has been called into question here in the past because of his actions in relating to, his whole candidacy and if he's mentally stable enough to be president, because president is a job that takes all of your mental health in every sort of way. So that's something that's very huge and something that the average American is concerned about when it comes to a president. So that was just a short clip talking about that. And this is an article on the same sort of issue by the Post Millennial. And it states, Joe Biden accidentally reveals he's reading off a teleprompter update. Ben Winston, the executive producer of The Late Night Show, denies that Joe Biden was reading off a teleprompter. And this is Ben Wilson's, Twitter account. He states, hey there, at Steve Guest, whatever, and The Blaze. So sorry to disappoint you. I am the executive producer of The Late Night, Late Late Show. That's actually James Prompter, not at Joe Biden, on Zoom. They see all our screens, including our prompter. It's the only way it can be done. Original post follows. Joe Biden has made, and this is obviously their update saying that this solved the problem, but a lot of people still don't necessarily think that it justifies what was being said. So I'll continue to read the article that was originally published, because their update was that Twitter post, and if you were to believe that producer, then you can go on from there. But I'm just going to read the article and then give my opinion. Joe Biden has made the most of delivering remarks in his tricked-out Delaware basement. The private orchestrated interviews that conducts from his home office allow him luxury of reading from a script, even for interviews that would, if in studio, be unscripted. The reflection of his nose was visible when he held up a large framed glass photo of him and his two sons from their college days. As he flattered over the description of the photo, the image on screen teleprompter was made clear. And this Twitter account basically says, check out where you can see the teleprompter. And it's the same sort of image. And those who are listening audioly, basically you can see behind Biden is a television type of screen that he's sitting in front of. And you see a reflection of what he's seeing in front of him. And it looks to be text that he's kind of reading off of. And then it continues to say, Biden has been criticized this election season for being unwilling to say much that has been pre-written. Despite evidence to the contrary, that Biden's campaign has taken issues with these allegations that Biden is not willing to speak off the cuff and without prepared remarks. There has also been suspicions that the questions Biden is asked by press are known and are vetted by the candidate, which has handlers beforehand. At a campaign event in Kenosha, this was what I just about to bring up, but I'll read. Biden took a question from a BLM activist, Porsche Bennett, where she said, first off, she was told to go off this paper, but I can't. You need the truth, and I'm part of the truth. And then the campaign later denied that she kind of did that whole thing on her own, because obviously that would be a huge blow to Joe Biden's candidacy and his presidency from that point, if he were to get it, but his whole candidacy from there. Now, Joe Biden's mental health is obviously something that almost every political commentary, especially if they lean conservative, has talked about. But even those who don't lean conservative, like Brainlit, or what I think her name is, on YouTube, who was a big Bernie Sanders supporter with the Democratic election this presidency and last presidency, and she has a YouTube channel that is relatively popular. But anyway, long story short, she was even making fun or poking fun or whatever you want to say at Joe Biden's mental health of reading off a teleprompter or whatever else you might want to mention from that point. Because you could tell, even if you don't necessarily follow politics that much, that Joe Biden isn't necessarily 100% there. And to be president is a position of power that's so important despite you're the representative for your country. So mental health is something that takes a huge issue or a huge concern in people's health. I remember a history teacher when I was doing community college that was talking about that it was the biggest thing that people vote for. What he argued was the biggest thing that people, the average voter does, is looks at the mental health of the candidate and wants somebody that they think, one, gives them the most amount of money. That's the first thing they vote for. And second thing is healthy enough or is health, because they want a president that's healthy. They want someone that represents the country well. And you could argue that Trump doesn't represent the country well through things he says on Twitter or whatever else. But at the same time, Joe Biden's mental health itself, and not necessarily what he says, even though what he says might be part of it during his stuttering or whatever else, but mental health is at question. So that's a very interesting concept to go on from here. And I'll check the comment section real quick, and then I'll get into this next two sets of articles. Jimmy says, before you end the video, show us the dorm. 1 minute. I might show you the dorm at the very end of the video. Sure, Jimmy, I'll do that if you're still here. I don't have too many more articles left, probably like 10 minutes or so. So I can show you at the end here. But actually, it won't even be like 10. Anyway, we'll go on. So this next topic is something that is rather interesting. And I think I've said interesting a lot this video, but this one is interesting because shootings and gun violence have been something that's rather huge. And you have the whole incident of the police officer, you know, getting shot in Lancaster or whatever else. But at the same time, you have to remember the fact that the shootings are happening at a regular basis. And this article here is a recording of the shooting that happened. And I'm not necessarily going to play it on YouTube before I, you know, censor it. So I'll play it later on. But at the same time, you can just simply type in shooting at this point on Google and you'll see a recent update of a shooting that has happened. And it's happened multiple times, and I just did it before this podcast and pulled up two articles about a shooting that happened or an update of a shooting that happened. And of course you had that shooting of the police officer not too long ago that sparked some criticism about potentially these protests or whatever else making people a little more brazen, but at the same time you could argue against that too. But we'll read this article a little bit, because this was in the Northwest Wichita. It says, Wichita Police Chief Gordon Ramsey said officers were called to 1100 block. They arrived and found who had been shot. Police then arrived, informing that other two men had arrived at the hospital with gunshot wounds. One of the men died and the two others remain in critical condition, according to the chief. He said the shooting is believed to be gang-related, but investors don't know yet how the men are acquainted. One of my concerns is we don't yet have a lot going on. School was out, our jobless rate has increased. It's just been a difficult year for a lot of people, and I think because there hasn't been a lot of things going on, little beasts have turned into gun incidents, and that's obviously concerning, the chief said. There has been a lot of deadly shootings in the last 4 days in Wichita, Ramsey said. Shootings in the city have been up all year long. He said many of the recent shootings involve younger people with gang connections. All the shootings and killings just because of color is something you are wearing. For real, man, come on. And then it goes on to talk a little bit about more about people who knew the victims or whatever else from this shooting. But I just wanted to kind of quickly show the fact that shootings are becoming so often now that you can simply do a Google search and come up with at least two different separate incidents of a recent shooting that has happened from this protest or just in life in general. And this is the last article we're going to talk about here, and then we'll end the podcast from here. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. I mentioned last week on a one topic as well, or one topic article on the podcast as well, about the legalization of marijuana, or the decriminalization, for lack of better words, for marijuana. Marijuana is obviously a major topic that especially like the Libertarian Party has been a fan of making marijuana to be allowed everywhere. And it's something they're very much a fan of. And you obviously have your people that aren't necessarily a fan of it that mainly take a perspective that marijuana makes you lazy or makes your brain small, you know, that type of scientific approach to marijuana. But at the same time, if you were more libertarian minded or type of candidate, you would think that simply if you're a pure libertarian and pure simply minded person, you think that the allowing people to make choices is the core value of being human. So you should be allowed to make the choice to smoke marijuana if you want, and that should be allowed everywhere. So that's kind of a general stance about the marijuana as well. But I'll read this article because I mentioned last podcast that they were potentially making a House vote for legalizing marijuana or decriminalizing marijuana for prison terms and prison reform, because drug-related offenses are something that many prisoners do get into jail for doing. It states, Democratic vice presidential candidate nominee Kamala Harris said, if elected, she and the presidential nominee, Joe Biden, would plan to decriminalize the use of marijuana. Harris outlined the proposal broad strokes during a virtual roundtable she hosted with ABC through Facebook Live. Under Biden-Harris administration, we will decriminalize the use of marijuana and automatically expunge all marijuana use convictions at the end of incarceration for drug use alone. Harris said, this is no time for half-stepping. This is no time for incentivizing. We need to deal with the system, and there needs to be significant change in the design. We need to deal with the system, and there needs to be significant change in the design of the system. Over the course of California former Attorney General and now Senator Harris' own stance on cannabis has shifted considerably. One second, the computer is about to die here. This is all part of doing a live stream. You have to be able to adapt on the fly. I don't want to lose what we have here just because of simply battery. So I make sure we're all good and we have like, okay, we're good. All right. So we mentioned that her cannabis perspective has changed. As reported by the Boston Globe in August, the former prosecutor was solely against the legalization in California as early as 2010 and as recently as 2014. Then in 2019, she sponsored legislation that would federally change cannabis, formally legalizing at the federal level. Individual states would still need to decriminalize or legislate the following federal descheduling. Known as the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement More, I probably butchered that, the bill Harris introduced would not only deschedule cannabis, but also establish a process to expunge convictions and conduct a sentencing review hearings related to federal cannabis offenses. In addition to calling for the establishment of a trust fund that would support communities impacted by a war on drugs. And again, I wish Ron Helton was here. Maybe he has hopped into the comment section by now. But he's very big on the drug war. And I think I'm going to talk to him on Discord or wherever else and maybe get more of his stance on it. Because I am potentially going to do a video about it, but I just don't know too much about it, and that's why I kind of want to think about it so that I have more of a perspective of why drug wars are such a big deal and why the decriminalization could have such a large impact for the whole idea. But the whole big thing about Kamala Harris and something she's been targeted for doing is that she's willing to switch her positions on a dime. At one point, she was somebody that wasn't so much 100% for fracking, but now she's 100% against fracking in almost every way. And there are several other stances you could show of Kamala Harris switching positions just when it becomes, for lack of better words, politically convenient. And that's something that is rather harmful for being a 100% pure type of candidate, and something that goes against if you were to vote for someone that you believe as a human is a responsible or is a fully representative or whatever you want to say, somebody you can trust because you believe their morals, you believe their knowledge or whatever else. Kamala Harris seems to be the type of person that's willing to change on a dime in whatever issue. And you could say the same for Trump, because Trump has had positions that have switched. And I think you could really say the same for every single politician out there. There's only a very few politicians that you would probably be able to come up with that don't have stuck with their position all the way and you believe are actually valid and have good morals as a person. And I think that would make a short list of probably 10, maybe even less than 10. I could think of like 3 people right off the top of my head now. And with those 3 people, I think there would even be some debate on if you actually think that they are 100% truthful in what they say and what they believe and what they vote for and all that. So by the bare act of being a politician, you go against a lot of things in what you say. And yes, as a human, yes, as a politician, you are able to change positions if you get new evidence, if you get new ideas, if you get maybe your constituents try to change what they think, then you should be able to change as a congressman or as a representative of your place. But at the same time, drastically changing just when it comes convenient, such as like LGBT rights, when people would switch and say that they support it when they used to be against it just because it was popular, is something that comes across as being just ingenuine and something I'm not necessarily a huge fan of. So I think that is a big, huge X mark over Kamala Harris for me when it comes to her being the vice president candidate. But that is just me, so I'd be interested to hear your idea about that as well. And before I end the video, I'm going to quickly show my dorm room a little bit because Jimmy wants to see, and I'll make sure he gets to be able to see. And then after that, I'll give you a chance to add your comments if you have anything else to say. I appreciate Jimmy, J. Edgar, Layman Talks, and anyone who may be watching in the future for watching my video. I hope you liked it. But as I kind of show the room, I'll give you opportunity to put your last words or whatever else in the comic section. But as you can see here, it can be a little bit delayed, so I hope it doesn't become all blurry. My microphone doesn't really too large, but I'm sitting at this desk. It's not the most organized level desk, but you kind of see how I have everything laid out at the desk. I have a fridge behind me, which you probably were able to see the fridge, but then up on the top I kind of have my television here, and that's rather important. I got my Xbox down below, my computer sitting in front of the Xbox. Haven't really played the Xbox very much though, but I got a few games up there thanks to the roommate and such. And then right here I got my bed, and you see my headphones up there. I was going to wear my headphones for the podcast, but I decided not to for today. But anyway, I got my bed right beside where I'm sitting. Then, like I said, behind me, you got the fridge. I'm not even sure if I'm really pointing at it. And he bought a second TV, my roommate, because he wanted to play his console, because he has a Xbox One. So he's, you know, he's fancy. But anyway, that's the fridge. Then over here, you got the desk, so it's kind of like a replica of my side of the room. Slightly different layout for the cabins, or whatever you want to say. And then you just got your door, so this is all like the variety of the room. You can kind of see how big it is from this, you know, broad landscape of it. But really, we're not that big of rooms. You got your closet too, so we actually got a surprisingly amount of storage in the room. I was a little bit surprised about that for storage space. That was something that was rather interesting for that. Now I see that J. Edgar has some comments here on YouTube. He states, "The problem with Kamala is that she's now coming out saying that all drug laws are bad, but she was all too eager to use them as the DA, because it was cheap labor for the wildfires and other things that the California penal systems uses prison labor for. And that was kind of what I was trying to hint at, but you said it very eloquently there, Ed. But that was one thing that drives me absolutely crazy with Kamala. In general, she's quick, willing to switch positions. But when it comes directly towards weed, and the article did talk about that a little bit, but I decided I didn't want to really necessarily read the whole thing out. I just wanted to hit kind of the major points. But one of the things the article did talk about was the fact that as a DA, she was passing a lot of legislation and extending prison times for keeping prisoners who had drug offenses, mainly weed offenses, to be longer sentenced in prison so that they, again, like you said here in your comment section, that they could be used for labor, and for cheap labor for the state and for her county or whatever else you might want to say. And she was perfectly fine with making harsher laws and everything when it related to that. So the fact that she was not willing to do that later on is something that is extremely aggravating, because really she's just willing to change stances when it becomes politically convenient, and that's something that is 100% aggravating, and I think aggravates everybody who at least is somewhat aware about who Kamala is or politics in general. But then again, before I end this video, I'll give you a little bit longer if you want to add your comments, just so I don't leave anybody out here. Again, I appreciate the new viewer, Layman Talks, and again, Jimmy and Ed for stopping by. I highly appreciate your comments. It makes it go by a lot better, and I really appreciate them. But one of the big things, and also, please make sure to subscribe and hit the like if you haven't already, because that just makes me feel good, so might as well do it. Doesn't hurt you. Anyway, but as I was kind of wanting to conclude with, besides thanking everybody for joining, was the fact that politics is something that's rather a complex issue, but at the same time is very simple. A lot of times who people want to vote for, like my history teacher said in the past, and like what I come to always believe, is they're willing to vote for the candidate who gives them the most amount of money, or they believe is going to give them the most amount of money, and then somebody that they think is going to be healthy and is going to be fit. So if you take a Tim Pool type of approach, you might think that President Trump could be winning by a landslide in this election because of the silent majority, so to speak, wanting to vote for him who don't necessarily get seen by polls just because of the way how polls are done. But at the same time, you could argue that the return to normalcy is going to be so high for people in this upcoming election that Joe Biden could win just for the fact that people can't stand hearing another 4 years of mass media and Trump. So again, thank you for stopping by the Breakdown with Birkenoff. I hope you liked what you hear, and keep on hoping that they get those wildfires stopped and in California. Yes, it's kind of funny and a little bit to kind of see a place that generally I don't agree with in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it's a rather harsh thing and a harsh idea, so I don't want to see it going on too much longer. I don't even know why I really wanted to say that last part, but anyway, thank you everybody for stopping.